Welcome back to the Discovering Forestry podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Corey Lofi, alongside co-host, Mr. Joe Aitken, here for another compelling conversation about trees. Joe, summer is in full effect. We're moving and grooving out here in the West. How are you?
You know, about the same. You know, it's good. Everything's good. It was pretty funny as I was talking to a customer, a youper. My youper buddy, Joe Kaplan up there. And we got into a lot of you guys, when you listen to the podcast, you hear our little jingle in the beginning. And the musician that created that, that's all made with forestry implements, a clicker beating on a blade and a chainsaw at the end. I just asked him, I says, well, tell him I said hi and tell him we're still using it. It is a great part of our podcast is that. So that, I know it's been a while since we talked about it, but it's a year and a half now running. The youpers up there are the ones that made our little jingle for the podcast. So I'm going to try to get up there, see the guys, say hi to them. Hopefully we'll have some more swag to pass out to the UP and spread some more love. That's all going good, Corey.
That's funny. I was thinking, so youper for people who are not from the Midwest is people in the UP, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
You know what? I didn't even think of that. You know, it's just rolls off the tip of the tongue here in Michigan. And the youpers up there call us trolls because we're under the bridge.
Oh, that's awesome.
Lower Michigan is called trolls because, or they call it, what do they call them? Something to do with chocolate. What were they calling us? Because everybody goes up north to Mackinac to get the fudge. Fudgies. They call us fudgies. Because we're always traveling north to get fudge.
Well, it could be worse. You could be from Illinois. But tonight's guest.
Yeah, keep on rolling. Keep rolling.
tonight's guest is, he's not a youper. He's not from Illinois. He's not from any of those other Midwest states. He's from the great state, originally the great state of Wisconsin. And we're going to bring him on here in just a second, but his name is Matt Bailey. He's an amazing, I guess you'd call him landscape. I don't know if he's an architect, installer. I don't know where we're going to go with this conversation, but Joe, at this time, I'd like to welcome our friend, Matt Bailey, to the podcast. Matt, welcome.
Yeah, welcome, Matt.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
So, Matt, before we get going, I just want you to know that we're going to try not to offend you. Because as arborist by trade, you know, there's a saying, have an arborist look at your trees, but let Tom, Dick, and Harry take care of your lawn. So as long as you don't fall in the lawn side, you know, that old school, how I was brought up, you know, you call an arborist for your trees. But I think it's going to be exciting about tonight is that that has changed over the last 30 years where there are some amazing landscape companies that do both turf and trees. So I'll try not to be too old school and I'll let Corey ask you most of the questions.
Well, that's interesting. That doesn't bother me. And if anything, I lean more towards the tree side than I do the turf side. So, I'm okay with that.
Okay.
and that's why you're on the show. So Matt, can you please tell us and our audience a little bit about yourself and maybe the career path that you've taken, where you've worked, what you've done, all that.
Sure. I'll try and simplify it as best I can. But currently I own and operate Alpine Landscape Service based out of Winter Park, Colorado, in the lovely mountains in Grand County. And this business was incorporated in 2005. My history is primarily in landscaping with a little bit in arboriculture. I started, just like everybody else, I started as a young kid pushing a lawnmower around the neighborhood, then pushing the snowblower around in the wintertime, bust the paper routes, all that good stuff. And then I had a passion for the outdoors and I had a passion for football. And so I chose to go and get a 2-year degree in forestry and wildlife up in a small town called Ely, Minnesota. There's a small college up there called Vermilion Community College. And I think I might have mostly gone ice fishing and skiing, but somewhere in there I learned about forestry. So that's my minimal educational background besides just hard work. And so from there, I continued to work in the landscape industry. I worked for some nurseries. I've worked on a sod farm. I've also worked specifically in landscape construction. When I moved to full-time to Colorado in 2004, I spent one summer educating myself on high altitude planting. And I thought I was taking a career change. I thought, well, I'll leave the landscape industry and try something different. And that changed pretty quick. And before I knew it, I was hustling, and that's how Alpine Landscape Service incorporated in 2005. And now we're putting together amazing landscapes for beautiful homes that meet people's mountain lifestyles, and it's just an amazing life. It really is. We work really hard all summer long, and then myself and my staff are all avid skiers and snowboarders, and that's what we prefer to do in the wintertime. So the company does not plow snow in the winter anymore. We do holiday lights, and that keeps us busy up until about the 1st of January. But after that, we get to go ski and enjoy the powder.
Well, you got to have your priorities, Matt.
Exactly. So, yeah, I kind of jumped all over the place there. But essentially, I'm self-made. I started this company on my own. I never took out a loan. I bought a pickup truck and put a plow on it, and that's what paid the payments for the winter time. And then in the summer, I took my wheelbarrow and my pickaxe, and I just grew from there.
It's interesting that through the year and a half, Corey and I have always talked about, plant healthcare starts with right tree, right spot. And right location. Obviously here in the Midwest, you could drop a seed out of your pocket, shoot helicopters, fly out of maple trees. Next thing you got maples growing everywhere. So high altitude landscaping. So it's amazing that you took the time to really dig into it, to see what's supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. So by doing that, you started plant healthcare off before you even put anything in the ground doing something naturally.
Yeah, that's a good point, Joe. I never really thought of it that way, but essentially, yeah, I took the time to study and learn what plants grow here and talk to people that have been doing it. I visited, if you guys have never been up to Steamboat, they have an amazing, beautiful outdoor garden area that has all the high altitude plants in it that you can walk around and take notes on. And there's sometimes even people there you can talk to about.
Yeah, like I said, it's amazing that how diverse this country is, and the plantings that are required to be planted in certain geographical areas.
Well, and to educate yourself on it, so many people, Joe, when they're talking to you and me, and I'm sure Matt Bailey gets the same questions, as they go, how do I get into the industry? How do I learn more about what needs to be installed here? What grows here? How do I do that? Where do I go? Matt just gave a huge nugget, because when you're talking about Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, like Joe, like you're saying, you drop a maple seed, it's, boom.
It's growing.
It's growing. You go to Denver where there's 300 days of sun and 8 inches of rain a year. You just cut that, you just 16th that. All of a sudden you come up to 9,000 feet.
Wow.
What grows there? So
but isn't there, Matt, isn't there a timber line that you get so high, things just stop growing?
Yeah, there. I don't remember the exact altitude, but that's correct. There is a timber line. And that timber line, there's still stuff that grows above timber line, but it's very limited. You're not going to see an aspen tree growing at 13,000 feet. So.
How high is the highest elevation that you've landscaped?
You know, that's a darn good question. I'm going to say probably 9,300, 9,400. There's a subdivision right at the base of the resort, Winter Park Ski Resort on the Mary Jane side. So that's got to be 9,000 plus right there.
You're talking 9,000-10,000 feet.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Above sea level, north aspect, where our growing season is what, Matt, from now? Actually, it was frost on my car this morning.
There was frost this morning. Yeah. There's frost every day up here. Come on, Court.
Yeah, that's
wow. That's amazing.
But to Corey's point, I mean, it's also a very limited short growth season too. You know, you can't expect to plant a tree and see it grow 2 feet in 1 year. That just isn't going to happen.
Is there any plant material that is similar from the Great Lakes Basin to high altitude? So the reason I bring that up is, what if someone, say Joe, I was shooting like Jed Clampett. I take a shot and got bubbling crude. Next thing you know, I'm a billionaire. And I want to go to Winter Park and I want to go 10,000 feet, but I want a maple tree. What are you going to tell me? I'm crazy? Or is there something that I can plant from home that's going to survive?
I don't know all the varieties of maples back in the Midwest anymore because I've been disconnected so long. But that's a great example because there is two varieties of maples that will do well up here. You have the Genalia, commonly named the Amur maple. That'll go from 8,500 to about 9,000. And then you have the, I don't know the Latin name, but the Tartarian Hot Wings. And that'll do just fine at 9,000. It's beautiful color too. I mean, people love it for color. So,
all right. So
but you're not going to be able to come plant a beautiful sugar maple and tap it every year for your tree sap or for your syrup. So
that sucks.
Yeah. you know, in the Midwest, you know, specifically when I was in Ely going to school for forestry, every aspen and birch and it was all called popple, right? Everybody called it popple up in the northern country up there. It's popple, you know. And so, sure, you can take an aspen tree with you if you'd like.
So,
Matt, as we're talking about this, all I'm thinking in my mind is, what do you do maybe eat differently, or what do you do new when you're doing like a high elevation install? So obviously the plant material's got to be correct. The plant location's got to be correct. Are you amending the soil? What does that look like? More water? What is it like to plant a tree here?
Yeah. You know, up here, I've run into two things. I've run into solid rock, granite, or I've run into clay. And so speaking to that point of amending the soil, that's extremely important. You know, so many people will dig a hole the size of the root ball, they stick it in there, and then they think the tree's going to grow. It's not that simple. You know, we need to dig a hole that's at least, you know, 1.5 times the diameter of that root ball and make sure that we're bringing in proper amendments when we go to backfill that soil. We're not just backfilling it with all decomposed granite or all clay. We're taking the time to mix in proper amendments. And we even use, a bit of a fertilizer mix that we throw in that amended soil as well, so that it has a little bit of food to go with it to get started.
Okay. Yeah, planting in rock. That's got to be, I think the planting, the landscape design really has to be spot on. You know, we talk about planting a tree, you know, the expectation of the customer of what they have and what they got as a site and what they can have. That's going to be kind of a headache at times. I want this tree here. Well, you can't put it right there unless you want to spend 30 grand to dynamite this granite out of here. You got to run into that every now and then.
We do. Yeah. And so all of our landscapes have a design. But I'm very clear with all of our homeowners or general contractors, this is a conceptual design. So meaning exactly to your point, Joe, I could be digging a hole and I hit solid granite and I can't plant a tree right there. There's just no way. So we have to find a different location for it to plant that tree.
So, be on the fly.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, and I'd be curious too, Matt, since you've been doing this for a while and you've kind of cut your teeth Midwest, but then doing some landscaping up here. What's changed as it relates to how your industry, your profession of landscaping, what's changed in the last couple of years or the last two decades?
As far as landscaping, what I've seen a big shift in is a lot more hardscape. We're starting to see a lot more people that want the outdoor living space. They want the outdoor fireplace. They want the boulder outcroppings to sit on outside their patio. They wanted, some have even wanted an outdoor kitchen. That's been a huge paradigm shift for me. We've always done little walkways or little patios, but it seems like just about every job we're speccing now, there's some type of outdoor living space involved in it. And specifically, what's growing more and more are the gas fire pits, the gas fire rings, because of living in the West, we have all this fire hazard all the time, and we get shut down for burning wood. And so just about every patio we're doing now has some type of a gas feature on it, that they can still sit outside and enjoy their fire pit.
That's pretty awesome. Like you said, you got frost this morning, at that elevation. So even if it was at night and it got down to, 40, 50 degrees, having that feature in the backyard, it's got to be incredible. Watch the sun go down, mm-hmm. a little fire on there, a little vino, a little smooching.
We did one not long ago where we actually did a pizza oven as well. So it's a fireplace on one side. It's a pizza oven on the other with a little countertop in the middle. And so that way they can make their pizzas and throw them in the pizza oven.
I like that.
Yeah. And he's got an amazing view of the Continental Divide.
Wow.
I'll have to get that address from you later so I can go. Uh-huh.
He probably don't live there full time, so he could probably make a pizza. You won't even know.
I've poached hot tubs before, but a poach in a pizza oven might be a first. But I think for a view, I might do that.
Hey, we'll pack it all in the Petzl backpack. Yeah. We'll sneak in there, fire it up, have a pizza, photograph it for the web. But
another big shift up here too, with everything, everybody wants to be fire wise now, and then also with all the water issues. Best is, are you going to plant things that are low maintenance, and are you going to plant native plants? And what does it take to maintain these once you plant them? Those are all very important things up here at 9,000 feet. So, people are getting smarter. They're not wanting to plant trees right up against the foundation of their house anymore. They want to, maintain their defensible space. People are getting a little bit more water conscious too. When they're asking me, they're saying, what does it take to maintain these trees or these shrubs after we plant them? So,
That's awesome. And I think that by maintaining a natural look to that landscape, and then speaking of keeping it as natural as possible, how's the mountain pine beetle issue going out there? A lot of people, the lodgepole pines were getting just brutalized out there. And I know Winter Park was getting hit pretty bad too. Are you guys still dealing with that? Is the Forest Service still dealing with it? How's that going out there?
I don't know if you want to say dealing with it is what the service is doing.
fair statement. I'm just curious
I'm going to throw a little funny story out there. I moved out here in 1997 to teach skiing and snowboarding. Fresh out of forestry school, I was living in Grand Lake, which is where the mountain pine beetle first started hitting, and I saw it. And I walked into the Forest Service, young and dumb, and I said, "Hey, you guys have a problem here." And they said, "Yeah, we know."
That was it.
And that was kind of the end of the conversation. I won't go into depth, but that was pretty much it. But along to make it short, I would say as far as the pandemic aspect of the pine beetle, it's kind of moved on. I don't think we're in the heart, the heat of it anymore. Is the pine beetle still around? Sure, it's always going to be around. You know, so is the IPS beetle. So is Cytosporid. All these things are always going to be around. It's just a matter of how you manage it. So,
yeah, I guess I just thought it was flabbergasted to drive around out there. We were working with the state of Colorado, working on some treatments early in my time with ArborJet. You're talking 15, 20 years ago. And the treatments were effective, but there was just no way you could treat the forest.
Yeah.
But in certain situations, like say hemlock woolly adelgid out this way, you know, there was a big removal program. There was a large faceted program to get around that. And I didn't know if that ever happened out there, but are they just driving around keeping an eye on it? And
yeah, coming there are definitely what we call homeowners associations very heavy into it, and they made sure you mitigated. They made sure you sprayed, and they made sure you cut down anything that was affected. As far as the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM, the U.S. Forest Service, the state, I think they've done the best that they can with the resources they have. You know, I mean, it was gigantic. It was everywhere.
You know? Oh yeah, it was the whole state.
But like I said, I think the plague aspect of it has moved on. I think it's always there, and it's always going to be there.
Well, do you think in your landscapes that you're designing for your clientele, you're starting to take some of those practices of, okay, if a species specific pest rolls through and wipes out your entire landscape, you're starting all over again. So has that taught some of your customers that maybe, hey, diversification in our landscape is key, or what are you thinking with that?
That's my job. That's what I do.
Yeah.
is I educate them on this. I educate them on, yes, every landscape out here is going to spec a spruce and an aspen. I mean, that those are beautiful trees and they fit well with our climate, but if that's all we consistently plant, then there's issues with that too. And so to your point, Corey, I'm starting to bring lodgepoles back in a little bit. We'll mix in lodgepoles with the spruce. We'll try different varieties of spruce that I know will do well up here. We'll bring in Engelmann. We'll bring in also bristlecone. And there are some microclimates up here that can actually handle an Austrian. You have to be careful, but there are some places that can handle an Austrian pine up here.
Wow.
But it's tough. It's tough because we're limited, you know. And that's why there is a monoculture. That's why the lodgepole thrive.
Right spot, right elevation, right,
exactly.
Rainfall, right soil profile, and they thrived. And then they thrive too much. You think about an insect infestation like that, obviously that's a native beetle. Mm-hmm. So it's not a foreign insect. They got blown over in the trade winds. You think about the millions and millions of years that trees have been on the face of the earth. They've probably been going through this for millions and millions of years, to where one forest would get so dense in a specific host, and then a vector would come in and thin it out. And, Corey, we've talked about that in silviculture, movement of the forest. And I think we have to understand that movement in the forest, that we have to recognize that movement in urban forest too. I think I just came into a big revelation.
Epiphany.
Yeah, it just kind of light went on. Did it get bright here? So, Matt, we're joking about that, but Corey and I have been working hard over the last year and a half to connect dirt foresters with urban foresters and landscapers. So this is how we do it, is that as someone's managing, like the BLM officers, or someone's managing a large tract of land and understanding how that forest moves, the urban landscape has to move with that also, or all we're going to do is be climbing uphill at the whole time.
Well, that's a good point, Joe. And I think since we have Matt, who's such a knowledgeable resource on with us, and I know I'm watching the timer kind of click down here, Matt, I'm going to put you on the spot. if you could get a message out to a couple thousand dedicated arborists and landscape professionals that listen to all of our episodes, if you could get a message out to them and just say something that they should know about a landscaper or choosing the right landscaper or any advice that you could offer, what would that be?
That's a tough one, Corey. You're supposed to ask that before the podcast so I can think about it. But, you know, on the spot here, I guess the biggest thing that comes to mind is make sure you do your research. Make sure you do your research when you're hiring a landscaper, when you're hiring a guy that's a tree trimmer that says he's an arborist. Is he an arborist or does he just know how to run a chainsaw? You know, there's a big difference. You know, people like you and Joe that have gone through school, that understand arboriculture, that understand plant health care, that's important when hiring an arborist. People like myself that have been in this industry since they could remember, and that took the time to study high altitude planting and that take the time to do continuing education and keep up with certifications and keep up with what's going on, that's important. You know, and in my industry, it's not just keeping up with what's going on with plants and plant healthcare. It's also keeping up with what's going on with the industry, right? So for example, I belong to a peer network, okay? And we get together every 6 months in person and we talk about our businesses and how we can improve and how we can grow this industry and how we can educate people and make it a viable industry. So that people understand that you're not hiring the guy that just threw a wheelbarrow and a shovel in the back of his truck. You're hiring the person that has put his life into this, that understands trees, understands plants, understands where the water needs to go, understands grading, drainage. I mean, landscaping is such a broad thing. It's huge. And some people are really good at mowing lawns, and some people are really good at trimming trees.
I can hear when Corey asked that question, I can hear the passion in your voice, and you nailed on some really big ones: continued education, love of the industry, love what you do. If you get a chance, look back. We recorded a podcast with tarot cards. Someone read our tarot cards for me and Corey, and the episode was, do you belong in the industry? Did the industry call you to it? Yeah, look, check it out, Matt. Check it out. It was very interesting. Yeah. And you sound like you love what you do. So thank you very much for doing it.
Yeah, I do. It's very important to me. You have to have passion to do this.
Oh, that's awesome, Matt. And if any of our listeners want to get inspired more by your words or some of your work, what's a good place that they can either see some of your work on display, a website, or a good way to contact you?
Sure. We have a great display at www.alpinelandscapeservice.com. And you're more than welcome to always reach out to us via email at myproject@alpinelandscapeservice.com. Those are the two best ways I can think of right now.
It's perfect. No, Matt.
Fantastic. Thank you.
From the bottom of my heart, and I know I'll be seeing you someday soon here, as we're just about, we're one mountain away, one hill away, but thank you so much for what you do. Thanks for what you've been doing for the industry and how you're changing it and directing youth and taking on some seasonal workers and a really good team. So thank you for doing that. And really, it's been a pleasure. I can't wait till we do another one of these.
Thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate it. Have a great evening.
Now you got to write a book, Matt.
Not the first time I've been told that.
All right. Beautiful.
See ya. Hey, great topic today.
Yes. And lots of good information.
Yeah. Probably one of our best yet.
If you enjoyed the podcast or have topics you would like to discuss, please send them to discoveringforestry@gmail.com. And please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend.
Thanks guys for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Corey.
Signing out.